welcome to Aging. I wonder what arises in you when you hear that. Maybe something about feeling redundant or shameful or invisible. Maybe grey or beige or greyish or peachy, quiet perhaps. Well, Kathy Ray, poet, spoken word artist and model, is none of that. She is hot, outspoken, sharp-suited, out there, often naked on Instagram, and has a lot to say about how aging women are viewed. In her professional life, she's recently been funded by the British Research Council to work on a PhD on poetry and marginalised lives, proof that it's very possible to start a new career at 60. She's active in challenging ageism in the fashion industry and promotes body positivity and body normativity via her Instagram profile, which is at Kathy Ray, C-A-T-H-I-R-A-E. And she shows images of her perfectly ordinary aging body to make older women more visible and attractive and vibrant. She offers writing workshops and seminars on aging and is very available, she says, for poetry and spoken word performance. You just have to ask her. And that email where you can find her is Kathy Ray, C-A-T-H-I-R-A-E 62 at yahoo.co.uk. This was recorded in December 2021. And just to reassure you, in case you're worried, this is a festive free zone. There's no bells, there's no glitter or mince pies here. You are quite safe. How old are you?
I'm 60. Oh, right. God, I'm, okay. I'm 61. Bugger. How did that happen?
Yeah, you've got a few years on me. I'm 50, I don't know, actually. No, I've forgotten. That's how old I am. I think I'm 56. I might be 56.
I hadn't really...
And I don't give a shit.
I think also the last 2 years, we haven't really got the wear out of them, have we? So I don't feel I've had the last two birthdays at all. There were such non-events of not going anywhere, doing anything.
So tell me about ageing and your experience of ageing in yourself. How is it to be 61?
It's surprising, really. I had an experience the other week. I had to go and get a prescription. I haven't been to a GP for years. And when I went to pay for it, the woman said, no, they're free for you. It was like, oh, my God. There I was in a fabulous vintage faux fur coat and fantastic biker boots, you know, because I get dressed up at any occasion these days. And in my head, I am rocking it. And in the eyes of the very young assistant, I'm a woman of pension age getting my free prescription. And it was just, and I wanted her to say, oh, could I see some proof of your age, please? Because that would have made me feel better. And she didn't. She just handed me my free government-endorsed, you are quite old, free prescription. And part of me wanted to go, yay, free. And I went, oh, you're actually old enough for the government to give you stuff. Now, I'm only 4 years away from a bus pass. And I can remember in my 20s and 30s looking, oh, look at the old ladies on the buses with their bus passes. And bugger me, I am this close to being one of those old ladies on the bus with their bus pass.
So what does that mean, though? I mean, what does that mean, that you're an old lady? You will soon be an old lady on a bus pass.
I suppose it's about the disconnect between how you feel inside, or even, I mean, one of the great joys of getting older is I'm now really short-sighted. So when I look in the mirror, I look bloody marvellous. I try to never, ever wear my glasses when I'm putting makeup on, so it just becomes a slight blur and I look fabulous. So in my head and in my impaired vision, I look great. I have realised that children now step out of the way carefully to allow the old lady to get down the streets. That's fairly horrific. It is that notion, I think, that what you feel inside and how the rest of the world sees you begin to disconnect more and more.
I remember my dad saying, he was in his, I think he was mid-70s or something, And he had dementia, and he said to me, "How old am I?" Which is kind of what I say now to my kids. "How old am I?" And I said, "You're 76, Dad." And he went, "Am I? But I only feel 18. How can this be?"
I can remember someone saying to me when I was in my 20s, she said something like, "You know, I still feel like a teenager." And I thought, "Oh, shut up, you stupid old person. Look at you." Had I been nicer then, I would have gone, "Yes." And had I realised that actually our internal notions of self don't massively change.
Yeah.
I still
wonder what age. So what age do you feel? Where are you?
I'm prepared to go for 40.
Hmm.
Like, 40 seemed like quite a good age, quite sensible. The children are house trained. And you no longer give too much of a fuck.
Mm. Yes, it's that thing about fuck giving, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the gift. That's the gift of it.
Oh, that is marvellous. My really...
The biggest present is that you care less and less.
I care almost not at all. I think, yeah, there's that terrible saying, youth is wasted on the young. Mm. And I think there's a real issue. I spent my 20s and I was a model. I was very attractive. Convinced my body was wrong on every level. Wearing, you know, baggy black things and not going swimming and certainly, you know, lots of sex with the light out. Had I but known just how hot I was then, I would have walked around naked. Or it's only a lot more naked. I would walk around naked now, but women of my age are so invisible, nobody'd notice. And they probably think I'd early onset dementia and look for my carer. And go, "Oh, that poor woman, she didn't have proper clothes on. Is no one taking care of her?"
But this is as good in terms of use as you're going to look.
Sorry?
This is as good as you're going to look. You're going to age from here.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I haven't seen my mother quite a long time because, you know, bloody COVID. I went to her a couple of months ago and she's now nearly 91 and we went bra shopping, which is an interesting experience with someone who's nearly 91 in the world of COVID. And she was saying she still wants pretty bras. They don't make pretty bras for 91-year-olds, we discovered. And she was just talking about she still wants to look and feel attractive. So clearly it never stops.
Mm.
I don't think you ever get to a stage where you go, "Oh, well, I'll just wear taupe, elastic-waisted trousers now." Unless you choose to, ironically, and that's fine. But I don't think we ever kind of go, "Oh, well." Or maybe some people do. I think I'm particularly superficial.
Well, there's states of depression where you don't care.
Yeah, I think that's very, very different. But I don't think there's ever a stage in aging for most people where they don't care a bit.
Mm. Kathy, if you find me wearing pastels and taupe, will you come and shoot me, please?
Yes.
Get on the train to Watford.
It's not very far. I can come down. Yeah.
Give me a pistol.
If ever I say to someone, "I'm going to buy this because it looks really comfy and it'll wash well," I expect someone to come put a pillow over my face.
I know, I'm quite a fan of washing well.
Well, I am, but
I don't do dry clean only kind of fancy stuff.
I would hate to buy clothes based on the issue that they wash well and they're from Marks and Spencers.
Yeah, but on the other hand, a pattern saves a lot of soup stains.
Oh, yeah.
A messy eater.
And layering.
Poochie is the answer.
We are obviously both live in houses, but not. We're both very layered up. We've got the whole thing of not having the heating on during the day, which is fine, except when you work at home.
Yeah.
So I will be putting my gloves back on in a minute to do some work. I think one of the things about aging, it is a surprise to people. And the goalposts have moved. So when my mother was 50, the general acceptance was you were quite old and you could stop. What we've got now is this both negative and positive, in that we are told that women in their 60s are gorgeous. And we look at people like Helen Mirren and Frances McDormand, my particular favourite, and other women, and we're meant to be told, "You could look like this." Well, actually, we can't, because we have to go to work and walk the dogs and hack back the wisteria and go to Sainsbury's and, yeah, hoover under things. And we're not even, some of you could argue, we're not even allowed the privilege now of going, "Oh, fuck it, I'm going to wear taupe, elastic waisted trousers." We're still meant to make an effort.
Mm.
And our role models are these women who, yes, have minimal signs of aging.
How about Madge's Madonna's latest outing? Did you notice that?
Yes. Oh, I always thought Madonna started making huge errors. Remember, she did a video years ago, and she had in the videos lots of amazingly beautiful young black street dancers. And they were all in their 20s. And I thought, Madge, my lovely, it doesn't matter how yoga honed your body is and what a tight little butt you've got, you are putting your flesh next to 19-year-old nubileness. And that's a bad move. Because people always look at young flesh and go, well, young flesh is gorgeous. It's all not baggy and saggy, and it doesn't have strange give in it. It's been interesting, the level of misogyny directed to Madge about this, I think. Because, you know, we have that double standard. Old men, if you think back to even things like Pretty Woman, he was massively, or the recent Bond. He's how old? Well into his 60s, Daniel Craig?
No clue.
He's knocking on a bit. There is no problem putting him with women in his 30s, in their 30s. That's all part of the narrative. There is no problem, the notion of the silver fox. There isn't a female equivalent. The female equivalent is the cougar.
Mm.
And the cougar is a sexually voracious.
Predatory,
needy, grabby woman who is grabbing onto youth by shagging younger men or younger women.
Mm.
That's really different to a silver fox.
Mm.
So I think there is a huge disconnect between what is possible, what is aspirational, and where culture puts us. Mm. If Madonna wants to do photographs of her butt in fishnet tights, aesthetically, I don't find it, but I wouldn't find that kind of sort of murder porn particularly aesthetically pleasing anyway. Mm. But I think Daniel Craig in a pair of tiny shorts, swimming shorts, all good. Madonna in her pants is attacked, the amount of vitriol. And you sort of wonder why people feel so against this. It doesn't impact on them.
Mm.
And no one actually says, God, she must work hard to keep that body.
Mm. It's but, my partner showed me the images in the paper, and that's a full-time job to look like that.
She hilariously.
That's an eight-hour-a-day task.
Let
alone eating the right things and being rolled and kneaded and pummeled and
all that stuff. I mean,
all the stuff.
And it's never seen. It's interesting because when I took my mum to see Daniel the new Bond movie. It's a thing I would never see. I can't bear Bond films. And we both said, God, he must have worked hard at nearly 70 to get that level of body for this film. We were admiring. Yeah, he must have trained for months. Someone looks at someone like Madge or Helen Mirren, and we don't go, God, they must work hard. It's almost like kind of, oh, they must be so needy and vacuous and vapid that they continue this exercise regime.
Yep. And there's the misogyny right there.
All the time.
It's a double bind. Women, prominent women, are judged when they look gorgeous.
Yeah.
And judged when they
and they're judged if they manipulate their image. So the Sex and the City girls,
mm.
who clearly have had a lot of procedures.
Mm.
They get attacked by the right-wing press for looking a bit old, and they get attacked by feminism for going, why have you had so many procedures?
Mm.
They've had so many procedures, I take it they want to go on working.
Mm.
I did a professional photo shoot last week, which was interesting. I still do bits of clothing stuff. And the photographer said to me, what level of retouch are we going for? The possibility of there being no retouch wasn't possible in his head. And he's a nice man. We've worked together before. I like him.
Mm.
But I said, I'd like a few of these for my own portfolio, which have no retouch. And he said, I've never done that.
Whoa,
I have never produced
no.
a picture. Well, no. So even when we look at photographs of women who are aging a bit and have had no procedures, because we only ever see photographs of them, I can guarantee you there will have been work on that photograph. Maybe very high level minimal, but there will have been a bit of relighting, a bit of smoothing.
So how do we change this narrative, Cathy?
I don't know, demolish patriarchy? You know, just, we could do that today.
It's Wednesday.
On Wednesdays, we smash the patriarchy. I suppose it has to start much earlier, because if we only value women by what they look like, and that's how we value women. If you think about, I mean, I am not a fan of Anne Widdecombe on any level, but most of the attacks on a very unpleasant right-wing individual were actually based on her appearance.
And people are absolutely vile. It's like open field nastiness around her. And
Angela Merkel.
I don't like her politics, but
hideous. Angela Merkel, leader of one of the powerful countries in the world, dresses pragmatically. She dresses the way men do, a suit and a sensible haircut. And she's criticized for that.
And the deputy of the Labour Party, whose name I can't remember, was recently dropped. And the criticism of her was that she didn't look the part.
What is she meant to look like?
Angela Merkel. You know, she had leopard skin and kind of ordinary fun clothes.
Yeah. So we actually can't win. If we try to look like the men, we are told that we are mannish. I love that word. I'm bracing.
I really like being mannish. It's like dressing mannish is like one of my favourite
things. Mannish is great.
Thank you.
And in some ways, the reason it's so negative is because of the Radcliffe Hall Well of Loneliness book and that notion of early 20th century lesbian writing, which was coming from a place of immense self-hatred because of the culture they lived in. The word mannish was coded as so bad.
And it was one of the things that, I did in the research for my book, it came up. It might have been in Forever Feminine that HRT would stop your wife becoming mannish. Or maybe it was a historical reference. It was a historical reference to menopause making people more mannish.
Isn't that interesting? Slightly horrific. And actually, the thing I'm beginning to notice more and more as we get older, we actually do move into a place of androgyny.
Mm. Yeah, if you look at 2 90-year-olds, it's,
you can't tell
their faces, not the way that they're dressed. It's hard to detect gender.
Yeah, so we all move to a place of androgyny at some point in our lives. I think, to go back to your original question, how do we challenge this? I think there are a number of ways, and some of them are really pragmatic. I'm about to do a lecture for underwear students at Leicester University, De Montfort University, don't ask. And one of the things I want to talk about is, if you're a person designing that type of clothing, it's not enough to be size inclusive, and that's hard enough to get, for God's sake. You also need to think about that women's bodies change. My breasts, God love them, are not where they were in my 20s. So I think we need to really, and it's not enough for, you know, the fashion houses to have 1 or 2 or 3 stunningly beautiful women in their 60s and 70s. Because those women were supermodels in their 20s.
They're all five,
they're all 5'10" for a start off, and a size 8.
Mm.
They've always been beautiful. They will be beautiful till the day they die. They are not the face of older women. I would love to see people like Zara using women in their 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s. I'd quite like them to stop.
Dove did something like that, a slightly more inclusive angle a few years back. Did you notice that?
No, I don't, because I only buy pre-loved and vintage clothing. To an extent, fashion and I have bypassed each other for a while. I know what Zara a few years ago launched a range of clothes aimed at women over 40, and it was a special range. And what the range, it was called Timeless Classics. And Timeless Classics. timeless Classic is code for really, really dull.
Oh, fuck.
It was Zara does M&S. And no one said, actually, we can just put our 50-year-old models into the PVC dungarees we're selling this year, or the mad tweed wraparound skirt, or you know, the silk trousers. We have to design these special clothes for these older women because they won't want anything exciting or risky or colourful or patterny because they have put that behind themselves. So I think more visibility and I think more honest visibility. I would love photographers to have to put the procedures they put in place when they launch a photograph. I've done this and I've done that and I've done this to this image. Or even better, I haven't done these things. This is what this person looks like. It's also, in Britain, we older women are the fastest growing population group. There are more of us than almost anybody else. The youth, about this much of them. So this is on radio, isn't it? There's a very small amount of them actually around.
Yeah.
Women of the 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s are, we are it.
Yeah. But we have the cash too.
Absolutely. We have the cash and we can no longer continue a narrative that says one of the largest groups in the population don't exist unless they are prepared to make themselves look youthful or they are prepared to become invisible.
What's happening is the money markets are waking up to this. And I spotted the first menopause shampoo the other day from a major... Yeah, no, it's going to be there. It's going to be menopause coffee. There's going to be menopause hand cream, everything. Because it's
another version of making razors in pink and blue, isn't it, really? And charging more for the pink ones.
Yeah.
I'm sure menopause hand cream will cost massively more than Boots' own label.
For your damaged, cracked, useless hands.
And it also seems we seem to be moving the menopause from something that happens to every woman to something which is problematic. And in the same way that I've been thinking about the menopause quite a lot. I've got friends who are younger than me. And if I'm being honest, mine was absolutely painless. I stopped my periods. I wanted to kill people for a couple of years. Job done. But we seem to be moving to a model where the menopause is seen as the end of something. And if you compare it to puberty, puberty is the beginning of something. We move into hopefully sex and drugs and rock and roll or our version of that. There is no narrative about what happens post-menopause. Yes, it's us, we are here. But there are no words used except post-menopause.
There is, the second spring.
Oh, I don't know about this, tell me more.
Well, if you think about the time from your first period to kind of 20s, 30s of spring, you're going out, falling on your face, discovering the world. Summer, yeah. You want to have your spirit expressed. So you get into career, kids, creativity. Autumn, perimenopause, you're kind of getting more reflective. Winter, menopause, bit of a rest. Guess what? There's a whole new cycle. Second spring. Stumbling around, trying to figure out who you are now. Second summer, that's where everybody's having unsuitable sex, climbing mountains and wearing their PVC shorts and what have you.
And that sounds lovely. We have to also acknowledge that women pensioners in Britain are some of the poorest people in Europe.
Mm.
For many older women, actually, it's a time of extreme financial hardship.
Mm.
Huge worries about actually continuing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of women in Britain have dreadful state pensions only and may not even have paid enough national insurance to get a full state pension. They will be dependent on means-tested benefits. If they're in public sector housing, we know the public sector housing is a joke and a nightmare in the UK. We have a failing infrastructure, so affordable public transport, affordable healthcare, affordable access to good food is not there for low-income people. So I think the notion of second spring sounds lovely if you are middle class and entitled.
Mm.
And we also have a position where women are having to work. I mean, I'll have to work till I'm 67.
Mm.
I will actually have to work beyond that. All I've got coming in will be a state pension, which is £160 a week.
Mm.
I can't, you know, I don't think you can live on £160 a week. So I would love the notion of a second spring if we had a good infrastructure to allow women who are not middle class and not affluent to also do that. I think there's going to be a huge class and income divide at that point.
Mm.
whether women who have been in professional jobs will have a lovely period of affluence and climbing mountains having sex with 19-year-olds. I see women a few years older than me in my area, the women I know who are still working as early morning cleaners at 70, because they have no choice.
So
Second Spring sounds great because my work is always about class. I think it's great for some women. I think it also then puts pressure on women who maybe don't want to do that, who perhaps do want to wear comfortable clothes, stop getting their eyebrows done, whatever, wear big pants. It's almost saying to them, you know, when you thought you could just relax a bit, well, guess what? You can't relax even now. You've still got to keep that body looking good. You've still got to be a size 10. You've still got to be desirable. And maybe that's not so great either.
We're back to smashing the patriarchy again.
It's always a good starting point for the day, I think, really. I often say to men, smashing the patriarchy helps you as well. Because actually the patriarchy sucks for everybody.
It creates so much misery all around.
I was talking to someone yesterday and he's just been given, amazingly, 12 weeks paid new baby leave. And he said, the reason I stay with my company is because I knew I could have this when I wanted a baby, when we had our first baby. For most men, patriarchy says you get a week unpaid leave. And if you want to get on in the corporate hierarchy, you better be there at 8 and you better not be leaving till 6. And you better be a provider and a breadwinner, and you better be aggressive and an alpha male. So patriarchy does nobody any favours, I don't think. Actually, that's not true. It does an awful lot for a small group of entitled white men, which is why it's still there, because they have a lot of power. But I think many men offered a world that wasn't driven by patriarchy would go, oh, actually, this looks nice for me as well.
Because the in the sort of traditional male role is to hold it all together, to shut up, not have any feelings, work yourself into the bone and hold it all together.
And if you can't be that, and we've just begun, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years, a very small dialogue about male mental health. But I still, it's clear that men do not seek help.
Yeah.
And patriarchy says always, you must be fine. So, yeah, let's just smash it. You know, next, I'm not busy. Anyone who wants to hang out with me next Wednesday, and smash the patriarchy next Wednesday.
I'm
not
free
busy.
At about 11:30 until 2. Maybe
that, that works quite well. That's convenient, isn't it? Not too early. We don't have to go out in darkness. But I think aging, that's the other thing we have to bear in mind about aging is if we are lucky enough, and it does come down to luck, there are enough people who will say that, you know, I'm very wary of dialogues around that ill health is to do with bad choices or with not being positive enough or all that sort of ridiculous pink cancer nonsense. If we get to 50, 60, 70 and we are reasonably healthy, that is extremely joyous and lucky for us.
And again, largely to do with wealth.
Luck and good genes. I will live forever because everybody in my family lives forever. It's nothing to do with me. I smoke all the time. I shouldn't live forever, but I will, because luckily I was born into a family who do. And I think if we focus, if our society continuously focuses on be old but don't show it, or only show it in tiny, like you can have grey hair, because grey hair quite cool at the moment. You can maybe have a little bit of lineage on your face, but not too much. And instead we said, we are these amazing things that have lived through all sorts of exciting and bad times, and we are still here. And we need to celebrate that, I think, to celebrate the aging body authentically. I mean, one of the reasons I post pictures of myself with no clothes on Instagram, but the only reason I post pictures of myself with no clothes on Instagram and have to fight around the whole ridiculous nipple police. Instagram hates a female nipple.
So what happens if you put a nipple on Instagram?
They pull the picture down and they report you to the community standards immediately.
Yeah.
What they don't do is I get, unsurprisingly, men who send me quite often pictures of their penis, a thing. nobody wants to see over the morning tea. Those don't contravene community standards because they're done in private messages, and Facebook and Instagram do nothing about that. The sight of a female nipple is so terrifying that, you know, cultures will fall.
So you were going to say why you post naked
pictures? Yeah. Well, I realised that when I was 30 or even 40, I had seen very few older female bodies. Mm. Or if I had, they were the Madonna hot body, tight body, yoga body. And I didn't know what happened to your body when you got older. Mm. If you compare it to puberty, puberty is a feast of information. There are videos, there are TV programs, there are teen magazines, which tell you in loads of detail what will happen to your body. So most girls and boys go into at least a vague idea of what happens. No one tells you that your pubic hair will go grey. And who knew? Seriously. No one tells you your pubic hair will actually migrate from your pubes to your chin. You imagine it creeping up at night past your belly button going, yeah. No one told you that your elbows would age. No one told you that your skin will lose flexibility. And it doesn't matter how hard you exercise and how hard you deprive yourself of food at that point. Post-menopause, your torso will thicken because the muscle tone around your pelvis drops. And therefore, the middle-aged waistline, unless you are absolutely obsessive, will happen.
And that this is normal and healthy.
Normal, healthy, and inevitable.
Yeah.
There is almost nothing you can do about it.
One of my things is that drives me insane is that the ways our bodies change are made to, I mean, we're just circling back. We're just circling round and round this morning. Well, the ways that our bodies change are made to seen as personal failures.
Or they're medicalized.
Yeah.
You can have a procedure. Mm. You can have a nip and a tuck. You can have Botox. You can have this. You can have whatever. Yeah, you can fix this problem. And it's not a problem. It is your body aging.
So how is it for you when you look back at the pictures of yourself, which are very, very, I should say, very, very beautiful?
They are very beautiful. And they are done by a friend, a professional photographer. Because they need to be done really well. I didn't want them to look like readers' wives.
How is it when you see them?
When I see them? Mm. It depends on my day. Some days I look and go, yeah, hot as fuck, it's fine. The other girl kind of go and you go, oh my God. And you focus on, you know, my stomach. It's not an area of my body I like very much. And I have now, and I have to work quite hard to go, this is the stomach you have now. Mm. And you either accept that or you waste a huge amount of time and energy hating it. Mm. And hating it will make no difference. Unless I'm really prepared to have expensive, unnecessary plastic surgery.
Well, the hatred does make a difference. The hatred shuts us down. It numbs us out. It cuts us off from our feelings. It cuts us off from our joy, from our creativity.
Yeah.
If we're cut off at the diaphragm, we can't live fully.
Mm. And I'm, you know, the selling of shapewear to older women and the selling of things that will correct a problem or camouflage a problem. Is just so invasive. I occasionally make myself very cross by reading articles about how a woman of 50 or 60 should dress. I like to walk around the house going, for God's sake, that's just ridiculous. But they talk about hiding your neck, hiding your stomach area, making sure your clothes skim your thighs. It's almost as though the body is so abhorrent. It has to be contained. Either in clothes that hold you in ways that are very uncomfortable, or camouflaged in drapage. Is drapage a word? I feel it should be.
If it's not.
Yeah. And you should certainly never display skin.
So how do you choose what to wear in the morning, Cathy?
Sorry?
How do you choose what to wear in the morning?
It depends what, actually it depends on, I work from home a lot. I'm doing a PhD. So there are days when I actually work in my pyjamas with a hoodie on top because no one is going to see me, if I'm being really honest, you know. How do I choose what to wear? I have a lot. I have a huge amount of clothes. Huge. I mean, like, we're talking several wardrobes full and overspilling other rooms. And I've worked with clothes a long time. So I think I feel very comfortable going, you know, today, what am I wearing today? Vintage tweed trousers and a pair of Uggs. Don't tell anybody, they're very warm. And I will be layering a faux fur on top of this jumper later. It's going to be too cold. So I think it's often about textures and annoying people.
So it's to do with how they feel.
Yeah.
Texture is important.
Texture is incredible.
So you might feel into, well, today's a bit of a kind of a fluffy day or a,
well, you need to be
a bit of a, you need to be a bit of barkiness in my what is this? I haven't got many words today.
It's a tabard.
It's not a fucking tabard.
No, it is. Has it got sleeves?
No.
It's a tabard. It's fine. Yes. It's not, anyway. It's a tabard. Don't panic. It's lovely. I've got one very similar.
But table, that was the word I was trying to find.
I think it's also about how confrontational I want to be.
Mm.
So there are days when I want to wear leather trousers and pointy boots because I feel spiky.
Mm.
And I want to look a bit spiky. Mm. And also, I've spent years putting together outfits for myself and other people, and I quite like people to notice what I'm wearing because I put work into it.
So who is looking at you? Who are you confronting with the leather and the Chelsea boots, the pointy boots?
I think the very fact, if you go out dressed like that at 61, you get two reactions. I either get other, it's always other women who go, God, I love what you're wearing. Mm. And then we have a lovely connecting chat. Mm. I've heard younger men going, for fuck's sake, as I walk past.
And do you respond to that?
Depends how big they are. And if there's more than one of them, no.
Mm.
Because, you know, it's like the Margaret Atwood quote, "Your men are scared that women will laugh for them, women are scared that men will kill them." Mm. So no, I don't confront men because it's dangerous. And I think also for me, it's about, because I only ever wear things that make me feel good, my vibe is, I feel great. Yes, I am wearing leather dungarees. What do you want to make of it? Or I am wearing PVC shorts, or I am wearing fishnets. But I'm very aware that that's not true for every woman,
mm.
particularly older women who are told, dress safely, don't draw attention, don't make a fuss, don't ask for attention, don't make eye contact.
Mm.
And I think there's still that underpinning thing, particularly women of my age and maybe yours as well, of remembering rape cases in the past, but what the woman wore was a contributory factor. I'm pulling a face of just such pain about that. So I think it's almost like we're trained that if you dress in a way that is attention getting, you have to deal with the attention you get.
And it's also easier for people like us who are kind of, I mean, you're a performance poet,
mm.
and an academic.
Yeah.
You're not working in a call center or in middle management or...
I have done all of those things though.
And how did you dress then?
I used to work for a very large, I can say the name, I used to work for Next when I was doing my first master's, and they have an absolute dress code. You have to wear Next clothes,
mm.
even if you're in the call center. So I wore little corporate suits because they would have fired me otherwise.
Mm.
And I always felt very unhappy.
Mm.
But it was, you know, in the end, it's, if you work for the police, you have to wear a police uniform. If you work for Next, you have to wear Next clothes. It's the rules. They sell them to you very cheaply.
Mm.
It was a uniform. I worked in education, and education has very odd dress codes.
Tell me about that dress code in education. See, we were going to talk about this. You were going to talk about aging and academia and stuff.
Oh, I'll tell you my little story about it later. I suppose teaching for men is easy. They wear a suit. And suits are really easy for men. You wear a suit, you wear a shirt, you wear a tie, job done. For women, I think it's much more complicated. That's a pseudo-corporate world. What you wear to be seen as serious, and how you also manage to express something of you at the same time. And I think it is much harder for women. I think it's why so many women go down the corporate suit look, because it's just easy.
And maybe the thing about uniforms is they're a great disguise.
Mm.
You know, you put on a signifier.
Yeah.
Signifies safe, steady, knowledgeable, authoritative.
Yeah. Or anonymous.
Yeah. Disappear into it, and then you can get on with your job. You know.
Yeah. And I mean, in a way,
that's kind of dressing to uniform is just as much a disguise and performance as wearing
an
extravagant hat or something.
And I absolutely get why for some people it's much easier to just go, these are my work clothes. Mm. For me, that's a terrible feeling of sadness because I love clothes. I am so superficial. I love clothes so much.
Could you stop saying that you're superficial? Because I'm doing it
slightly glibly. I did an Instagram post a couple weeks ago talking about how the creativity that lots of women show in clothing, in how they put outfits together, knowing about clothing, knowing about what goes with what, knowing about brands, knowing about labels, is never seen as truly creative. It's always minimized. And I know people who are fantastic vintage sellers who can tell you everything about 70s fashion. They're almost art historians. But because they're talking about clothes they sell and not clothes in the V&A, it's completely devalued that level of cultural understanding. I would love us to celebrate more the creativity lots of women put into getting dressed.
Mm.
It is as meaningful as curating something else.
Mm.
I used to give my outfits names, and I might go back.
I dress according to the sort of characters in books, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I have whole stories going on about what I'm wearing, which gives me a huge feeling of inner pleasedness and joy.
What characters do you dress as?
Well, I quite often end up in a sort of Agatha Christie story. I quite like tweediness.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
Sort of Miss Marple-y kind of things. Or even, oh, God, I didn't mean to say, but even if I'm going off to yoga on my bicycle or something, you know, really kind of mundane like that, I have a sort of narrative in my head about the story about me going off on my bicycle.
It's very PG Woodhouse-ish as well. You know, the bright young things, they've always got a Celian terrier.
Or all kinds of stories. But I guess it's part of my fantasy life. It's kind of where my fantasy life meets the outside world.
And clothing can be amazingly creative.
But no, I wouldn't, you know, I've never said, it's out there now.
God, absolutely.
Here she comes, Agatha, down the road. I know about her and her clumpy brogues. Lyle stockings.
Oh.
So I really have a taste for kind of really kind of the clothes of the 1940s and 50s that were very practical.
They're also beautifully made.
Well, yeah.
The level of dressmaking. I've got a couple of 40s pieces and they're handmade by people. The level of dressmaking skill is extraordinary. You just think, wow. Mm. But I think the idea of wearing clothes as a way of either expressing a personality you have or a personality you want to have. I was flicking through Instagram before I came to talk to you, and somebody was talking about dressing for the mood she wants today, not the mood she's in.
Mm.
I thought, actually, that's fabulous. The idea that you might feel like absolute poo, but you're going to put on bright red lipstick, or you're going to put on a ridiculous sequined jumper,
mm,
or a pair of mad trousers. And even if it's the notion of an assertiveness. I started to teach that. You say to people, if you fake confidence, people will treat you as if you are confident. It becomes a positive loop. People think you're confident, therefore you respond with a confident response, therefore eventually you are actually confident. So actually dressing to embrace the person you want to be today, or the character you want to be, or the book you want to be in today,
mm,
might be a really good way of moving forward.
Mm.
And also, for years in teaching, I was known as a person who wore fantastic clothes. It was part of my identity at work, and I quite liked it.
Mm.
When you're surrounded in a sea of people wearing sensible black trousers and nice blouse, you really have to do something quite quickly so you don't vanish into that.
Has your style changed much over the years? Or rather, how has your style changed over the years?
Oddly enough, I'm not interested in fashion. Occasionally, fashion and I find ourselves at the same bus stop, and that's a joy. I kind of go, oh, fashion. We appear to be catching the same bus. That's lovely. But I like clothes. I don't like fashion. So I will I try and buy all my clothes pre-loved, vintage, charity shopped, because, you know, the planet. And also because I'm poor.
And pants? Do you buy secondhand pants?
No, I don't do shoes, pants, socks or bras.
Okay.
Just because, and nightwear. No. And also, I can't do secondhand shoes because I've got really bad arthritis in my feet now. And therefore, my shoes end up being slightly an odd shape to cope with my slightly odd shaped feet. And the idea of wearing shoes other people have had on their feet, I don't know why. I'm happy to wear a t-shirt someone's had on their body, but not their feet.
I don't mind secondhand shoes because I can punch above my weight. I can buy fancier shoes than I could afford.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I buy secondhand, because I can buy things I couldn't. I mean, my budget would be Primark if I was buying new, and that would make me sad because the stuff is such shit on every level in terms of how it is made, who it is made by, the whole distributory story, and also the things fall apart. We're buying pre-loved secondhand vintage. Allows you to have beautiful things.
Yeah.
And we deserve beautiful things. And you can also justify buying a lot because you go, it's secondhand. I'm not doing a bad thing. So I can go out and come home with six items and not feel guilt ridden. If I came back from a fast fashion shop with six things, I'd be going, oh no, I bought into fast fashion and I'm bad. Which actually is another thing. Can I talk about this very quickly? Have I got time?
Yeah. Okay.
The narrative of pre-loved and vintage and charity shopped is immensely class-based.
Say more.
Because the better charity shop, I mean, charity shops used to be places of hideous, smelly joy, where you dug yourself through bundles of clothing and found, I got a Chanel jacket once in the 70s. They are now emporiums of things that are colour-coded and it's all lovely, and their prices are more than fast fashion. And if you are a low-income woman and budget is your only consideration, then you have to buy fast fashion. You don't have a choice. If a T-shirt in Primark is £2 and a T-shirt in Cancer Research is £5 and it's secondhand, then to beat women up for buying fast fashion fails to recognise the class and income issues. There's also a thing around inclusivity. I'm size 10. If I go into any charity shop, I'll find something I like and it'll fit me. I can also buy vintage, and vintage is tiny. It doesn't go above a size, a current UK 14, ever.
A 14 would be an extraordinary find.
Yeah, and that would be a small fortune.
Unusual. Yeah.
So if you are a size 18, 20, 22, 24, 26 and up, you cannot buy much vintage pre-loved clothing. If you come from a place of deprivation, and you spent your childhood wearing horrible hand-me-downs, or your clothes were rags, then you may have a huge need to buy new. And I see a narrative now where lower income, women of colour, women from poor backgrounds, women with bigger bodies are castigated by the middle-class yummy mummies who can go and blow £20 on a secondhand jumper. And I have huge problems with that. I'm getting low-income women have enough to deal with without being made to feel bad because they buy their clothes in Primark. Rant over. It's my only rant.
Thank you for that. I think it's really important to name privilege and to name the advantages of being able to have that rant, you know.
And also, you know, buying vintage charity shop and secondhand clothing only works if you don't need it today. If you've got one pair of work shoes and they fall apart, you can't wait for 6 weeks for the pair in your size and colour to turn up in a charity shop. You have to go and get something today, and that means fast fashion.
Yeah.
And it means the bottom end of fast fashion. Charity shopping's a luxury.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I still remember how they used to smell, but they don't smell like that anymore. The smell of sort of old, the smell of human lives.
And also, I mean, the other issue is that the internet's made everybody very clever. So your days of getting something joyous in a charity shop for a few pennies are gone. Because they now, all the big chains now employ specialists.
Yeah.
And the good stuff goes on to Vinted or Depop or goes on to their online shop or goes to their niche vintage shops.
Mm.
So what's left for the ordinary shopper is the stuff that isn't good enough to go onto those platforms.
Yeah.
I feel so sad when 80s stuff is described as vintage. That's another aging thing. It's so confusing. It says vintage blah. And you think, no.
I only bought that 6 weeks ago, sort of feeling, yeah. Or it's when you realise that music you think is quite current is 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And you think, well, no, that's new. I only bought that last month, sort of thing. Time telescopes. It's a thing, telescoping time.
Kathy, can we close our conversation, please, with your best tip for a happy inner life?
Recognise that some days aren't always great. And that's fine. Recognize that the world has a narrative about aging, which is damaging, and you don't have to buy into it. And recognize that aging is inevitable, and you can fight it a bit, or you can embrace it and move on with the more important things. And by more important things, I mean things like buying a really nice jumper or cuddling a dog or reading an Agatha Christie story. You don't have to go rule the world. And also, you know, I was an AIDS HIV worker in the 80s. I've lost friends to cancers. Actually, aging is an enormous privilege. And we should celebrate it because not everybody gets to be there.
Here's Cathy's contact details again. It's at Cathy Rae, C-A-T-H-I-R-A-E, on Instagram. And that email address, if you'd like to contact her, is cathyrae62@yahoo.co.uk. So, what do you fancy wearing today? How do you choose clothes? Do you have little stories? Do you pretend to be Virginia Woolf too? And how do you feel about your body as you age? It's such a fascinating topic. I'd love it if you came and joined the conversation on Instagram at Kate_Codrington. You should know that making podcasts is quite weird because I have intimate and deep conversations with people and then we record them and they scoot out into the dark and I never really know how they're going to land. It's quite a weird thing anyway. Let me know. Please reassure me. Don't make me beg. But if this conversation was interesting or funny or helpful for you, then please share it around the place with friends and on social media. Thank you so much for spending time with us. That's not a small thing in this busy, busy, noisy world. I'll be back next year, 2022, with a fabulous conversation with Elizabeth Joseph about how she's reinventing herself in perimenopause.